Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 60, for October 2nd, 2007. Another brick in the wall. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak.
It's time for MacBreak Weekly, a.k.a. the Apple Phone Show, since we have three of the Apple Phone Show regulars on the show this week, but couldn't be more fitting since most of the news really is iPhone news. Scott Bourne from the Apple Phone Show in the iLife Zone. Hey, Scott.
Good day to you, Leo.
On his high-quality AT1-whatever microphone.
Just the 4040, no big 4040. Deal.
4040. Did you go to Podcast Expo?
I did. I just got back.
Oh, good. All right. Maybe we can get an update from you on that. Chris Breen, also the Apple Phone Show, is here, but also known for his Mac 911 column in Macworld Magazine and his many books on the iPod and the iPhone. Is that iPhone book out soon?
It's out now. It's now at your local dealer of iPhone paraphernalia.
Yay. And do you have to rewrite everything?
No, because fortunately I didn't really touch on the whole hacking issue.
You left that out wisely.
Yes, I think so.
A wise man. Alex Lindsay is here from Pixel Core and PixelCore.com and PixelCore.tv.
Hello, back from the PME as well.
Oh, boy. And Andy Yannotko from the Chicago Sun-Times and the CWOB.com. Hey, Andy.
Hello, Leo. I'm sorry that we here at the phone show have to annex MacBreak Weekly. Unfortunately, we've determined that you're incapable of governing yourselves. We will be instituting a colonial governor until such time as peace is restored.
Thank goodness.
We expect to be greeted as liberators, by
you
the way.
Are. Welcome. We hail you. I give you chewing gum and stockings. Oh, no, you're supposed to give me chewing gum and stockings.
I'm making a mission accomplished sign as we speak.
You look good in that flight suit.
I think Steve...
And just as convincing.
Steve Jobs might be saying...
I'm preparing the denial of service attack.
Steve Jobs might be saying mission accomplished this week. He bricked a few iPhones. Let's get a review first of Podcast Expo. Then we'll get to 111 and then finally the bricking. So, Chris Breen, were you at PME as well?
I was not. I was not invited this time. I tried to get in, but they locked the doors. So.
I wasn't invited, but I could have gone. But I just
right.
I was kind of busy. I was up in Vancouver, and then I had to do the shows, and I had to do the radio show, so it just didn't work. But Scott and Alex, was it a fun event?
It was. I had to go because we bought a booth.
Yeah, Podengo had a booth.
The biggest booth there.
I think it was actually the most attended booth as well.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, when you went by I think that the big thing that Podengo got right, because I know Scott really can't say this, so I'll say it for him, is that they had a big theater, you know, so there was, you know, not a huge theater, but enough to, and really had real content. I think
so
that
people were doing
really
shows in the theater.
Yeah, people talking about how they get stuff done and people giving, you know, really useful content rather than just this is what we make, you know, kind of thing. And I think that by far it was the most successful.
Sounds like fun.
We made about 8 announcements at the show too. We bought Gigavox Lite from Doug and.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, that's great.
And we got content from Farpoint Media. We got the Mommy Cast off a Pod Show onto Podengo and all kinds of cool stuff.
Wow, you've been busy.
We have.
That's great. Well, congratulations.
It was a good show. One thing I noticed is it was, I mean, we've talked about the word plateau as it refers to podcasting. And, you know, there were the same pretty much number of people there this year as last. It's not like
anything. It seemed like there might have been a little less.
Yeah.
You know, well,
there was one less. I wasn't there.
Yeah. Well, and that might be the reason for the low attendance.
But, no, I doubt it very much. However, I think that one of the things I noticed about Podcast Expo last year, and it kind of was one of the reasons I wasn't overly anxious to go, is it's not podcast listeners. It's podcast makers who go to that show.
Right. Well, we're all going to be together in November at a show that might be a little bit better attended called Blog World and Podcast Expo. And it'll be interesting to see the contrast in the two shows.
Yeah. I'm looking forward. Well, you know, Vegas versus Ontario. I don't know.
Well, and the podcast and Portable Media Expo, or podcast and New Media Expo, they change their name every year. I can't remember, but Tim and Emil's show will be in Vegas next year as well.
Oh, will?
Yeah, they announced that a couple
Excellent.
Months
ago. I think that's really good. And frankly, I think I'm more likely to go if that's
You know, we drove around for hours looking for those strip clubs in Ontario, California, never found them.
Forget the strip clubs. How about a restaurant? I couldn't eat at that Benihana's one more time. I mean, that was it.
Well,
sorry.
Matt was kind enough to drive us all over to Morton's, an hour and a half away in Irvine.
There you go.
Yeah, well, the Cashfly Steak 2.0, and it was
we got shirts. We got shirts that say Steak 2.0.
Exactly.
I love it. Yeah, Matt Levine of Cashfly is a great boy. He's a great help to this show. They do about a terabyte of bandwidth a day for us, and I would have gladly eaten his steak. I might even have bought him a beer had I been there. So sorry.
I'm interested to know what kind of vibe was at the show. I went to the very first one, and at that point, everybody was trying to learn how to podcast, and so there was a lot of swapping of information between people. How's that different now?
You know, I think that there's been an arc that I thought was kind of interesting that occurred for me. I was talking to a couple other people there, and one is that the first one, everyone was trying to figure out how to do it 3 years ago or 2 years ago or whatever. Last year, there were a lot of people who were becoming successful, you know, and so they had some bigger podcasts, and there were a lot, you know, they had a lot of listeners, and a couple of those celebrities were there, or a fair number of the celebrities from the ones, I mean, including Leo and other people were there, and it was building into this thing where you could see this thing picking up. Now, what it felt like this year was that a lot of the folks that were successful had kind of crossed over into just online media or media production, or they had, you know, they didn't really see themselves in the same zone and didn't really come. And so what you ended up having were the people that were kind of in the middle still kind of moving forward, and then another round of people coming in that were new and, oh, I want to get into this. And so it seemed to like you didn't keep, they didn't very effectively keep a lot of the way it felt like a lot of there were a handful of people who were really leading the pack, but still it didn't seem like it was many. It seemed like they had kind of crossed over and moved on. And so I think that was the hard part for the conferences like this, is to kind of keep up and keep those people in the fold. And I think part of that comes down to what Leo was posting on his blog last week about the name podcast and how we think about the media.
You've never really called your stuff podcast. It's always been shows or.
Yeah, we just think of it as media. Stuff as shows.
Yeah.
You know, we do shows. It happens to show up on the internet, but it could be on TV or radio or whatever it is.
Podcast feels diminutive. It feels somehow like, oh, you're just a podcast.
Well, Michael Gohagan gave a speech that was interesting. He says, you know, I use a hammer. That's a tool. I use a podcast to tell a story. That's a tool. He says, I don't call myself a hammerer.
Right. Right.
And, you know, what was really interesting, Leo, was
that's
basically
exactly what my blog post said.
Well, more importantly, it's exactly what your keynote said a year ago.
Yeah.
Really?
I mean,
okay. Everybody was, remember we had the netcasting thing and you and I talked about netcasting?
Well, I even feel netcast was a little misguided, because even that is more about how you're doing, it's more about the tool than the hammer, than the content.
But in any event, you got some raised eyebrows last year, and this year everybody's mimicking you. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think there's nothing wrong with calling yourself a podcaster and identifying with that. I mean, it's a noble, it's a very noble medium, but it is really just the way we do it. The medium is, and you know, all of our shows are available in a variety of ways, including podcasts, but not limited to podcasts. So,
yeah, but it does help people know how to find your show.
Well, that's the question: does it help people, or does it?
Well, if I call myself a broadcaster.
That's confusing.
Do people know that? Well, I'm from Boston, so gee, I live in here in Ottumwa, Iowa.
Right.
I don't have a super heterodyne radio. I'm not going to be able to tune it in. Whereas if I say, well, I've got a podcast, they know to maybe plug my name into a search engine. They won't spell it correctly, so they still won't find it. But at least I got to distract themselves with a pointless effort.
Yeah, I mean, and it's true that there is no obvious answer to this. I think sometimes though, when you say podcast, the amount of explanation you have to do behind it, is inherent.
There's always that certain level of sophistication. A very bad level of sophistication that any new medium hits. It happened to blogging. It happened to website creation.
Yeah.
When you have people who don't want to do it anymore because they want to grow long beards and put on wire-rimmed glasses and pontificate to each other about the meaning of this new medium that they've created.
Right.
Have they transgressed? Have they crossed over?
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, podcast. Just record it. Just put it online. Just let people listen to it.
As we look at the progression of this, it happens in every medium. I mean, you know, when you look at my grandfather picked up the first commercial radio broadcast with a crystal little receiver in like 1921 or whatever. And the And he was a, you know, ham radio operator and, you know, all of that stuff. And, but it was really, it when you think about that, when you think about him describing, I remember when I was little, he would describe all this stuff. It felt like almost like podcasting.
Well, that's actually a perfect analogy because, you know, for all technology, because it used to be that if you had a radio, it's because you're one of these few people who understood the technology and knew how to get the parts. Yeah. And you're basically doing it for the satisfaction of doing something that's new and cool and to learn something. Then you had a radio because you had a friend who had those qualifications and could build one for you. And as things progressed, these people who knew how to do it, who invented the technology, who were in on the ground floor, they start becoming less and less distinct because now a radio is something you can just do and get at Radio Shack, for God's sake. But it happened with computers. It happened with just about every other technology. We'll be at a point in which, just like there's no such thing as a community of web users or a community of email users, there will no longer be a community of podcasters because it's just something that people can simply do. They can simply be on vacation. What they're doing is technically podcasting their day, but they're really just sharing their events with their friends and their coworkers.
When we see the broadcast media coming the other direction, so they're coming more and more towards the web. You know, we're, you know, with the, you know, somewhere in the middle, you have everybody kind of meeting, and that convergence that everyone talked about for a long time, you know, it looks like it's actually kind of molding together in a, you know, it'll be uncomfortable.
That's never really been what the big media does. They don't come to podcasting. They simply are always in the same business they've always been. They just add this new tool to their stable of techniques. Just like every really good newspaper now has a web presence that is four times better than the best independent political blog that's out there. Not all newspapers are up to that scratch, and that's why some newspapers are going to do really, really well in the next 10 years, and the others are probably going to be bought by the newspapers that are doing really, really well.
Yeah, it's kind of like that with podcasting. I mean, NPR's done so well with podcasting, but it is, and that's, I guess, was my point, really. They don't see themselves as podcasters. It's another way of distributing what they do, which is content. Anyway, we know this isn't the podcast show, but I thought it would be fun to get
it. Let me put on my fake beard so I can stroke it.
I like stroking my beard.
It's difficult being a respected and beloved industry pundit to explain to these people.
Well, I come from mainstream media, and I still have my foot in both camps. So, I'm not embarrassed to say I'm a podcaster. I just think it might be a little confusing since it's really
I'm
not.
I'm embarrassed by when I'm getting paid to be podcasting. That's all.
We'll talk about that later.
off mic.
So what I want is a review. And Chris Breen, I'd like you to start it off of iPhone update 111. Leaving aside the bricking issue, what's new in this update? And is it worth doing if you're an iPhone owner?
Well, you know, I wish I could tell you from experience, but I haven't updated my iPhone.
Interesting. Why not?
Because I like my iPhone the way it is. With AppTap, because I like to instant message from my iPhone. Yeah. I like to have a dictionary on my iPhone. I like to play games on my iPhone. I like to do lots of things on my iPhone. I can tell you what's in the update, though.
Wait a minute. Let's ask somebody who has obviously a virgin iPhone, because Scott Bourne doesn't believe in sullying his iPhone in any way with anything that Steve Jobs is not fully blessed. How do you like 111?
Hey, Scott, wait. I think that if Leo works at it, he can come up with an even bitchier version of that question.
What would you say, Andy? How can I make that worse?
Scott, you're an idiot. We all know
No.
Steve Jobs, and when he calls the tune, you start dancing. We would like to have the opinion of a complete Poltroon on this issue.
How about
Scott,
this?
You have 80 seconds to go.
Scott, would you remove your mouth from Steve Jobs' teat for a moment and let us know how you like 111?
You know, I come on this show regularly just for this kind of a bit.
I was speaking
in the tone of Leo.
Yeah, he was
on your side here.
We all love Scott Bourne. Nobody's mad at Scott Bourne. Everybody thinks he's the greatest guy in the world.
By the way, 25 people stopped me at the podcast section and said, "Are you and Leo okay?"
I know, and I had to actually post and stuff. Of course, I love Scott, and we have a fun, I think, talking back and forth on this.
If y'all agreed, this would be the most boring show in the world. Well, let me reverse this. I'll tell you exactly what's in the update quickly after this. I do not approve of the way this has resulted in bricked phones, because it does not appear that there's a path back into the fold. I'd like it on record that I'm about to say the following words. I believe that Apple and or AT&T have made a huge mistake.
Yeah, now, I think we probably are all in agreement, although that's not universal. I got a lot of heat for saying Apple made a mistake, but we'll get to that.
The mistake is that from a shareholder's point of view, it looks like it cuts off a revenue opportunity, which does not make Scott happy.
Right.
But let's go back and talk about what's in the update. Yeah. You got the iTunes Wi-Fi music store, which does work.
Show of hands, everybody excited about that? Yes?
Yes. You having more opportunities to spend more money. American.
Is it a great way to buy iTunes?
It was very quick and easy. I liked it a lot. They say there's improved security. No way to test that today.
They say there were 10 security patches, which is a lot.
I do believe the speakerphone and receiver volume are louder. They claim it, and I believe it. For the people who come from a BlackBerry, you got your double tap shortcut.
I do like that. I assigned mine. You have to think three choices. You can make it double tap, still be home. You can have it go to your favorites in your phone application so you can quickly dial, or go to the iPod. And that's what I did, because for me, it's an iPod as much as anything. So what did you do with your double tap?
I'm using it to go to the iPod as well.
Yeah.
You can now turn off Edge, so those $14,000 bills for your trip to Africa are all over.
Thank you.
You can change the SMS message alert sound, which is a big deal, I guess, to some people. But, I'm happy with the tritone.
You could only turn it on or off in the past, so now you can give it a sound. Okay.
And you can finally get mail attachments in both portrait and landscape mode, which is a step in the right direction. But why the heck can't we just get everything in landscape mode is my question. But, yeah, there's some cool stuff, and I updated. I had no problems. It worked in 8 minutes, no issues whatsoever. I don't understand the business case, nor can anyone make for me the business case for saying, well, now that you've bricked your phone, we don't want your $60 a month.
Yeah, just make them. Yeah, that was always kind of my attitude was, I think it's even immoral. Business aside, I think it's immoral to brick people's phones just because you don't like what they did with it. What you should do, and what you have the right to do, is make it take off those apps. I think that's a mistake, but you could take off those apps. And if they unlocked it, just say, sorry, you got to put your AT&T SIM back in and activate. You can't use it without AT&T. That seems like a reasonable thing. Do you think their way maybe was a technical reason they couldn't do that?
That's what I want to know. Is there a reason why you can't make it so they can roll back? Because, we took some phones for some friends to AT&T store, and they did their very best.
They couldn't. I've heard anecdotal evidence that some geniuses are able to.
They are. They're actually rolling it back now. So they've got the hackers up on the wiki have come up with steps so that you can roll it back to 1.0.2.
Has anybody tried that? How well does that work?
My understanding is it's working pretty well. We bricked one at Macworld because we had to see how it would work. And they're working on it in the lab now to bring it back. It depends on how you bricked it. If you use the free method, you can get Wi-Fi back, but you can't get the phone back.
You'll never get it activated as a phone. And this is because you're flashing the firmware on the modem in unlocking it. And there's no reverse flash.
Not yet. But
Apple could do that, though.
Oh, of course they could.
But they couldn't. And the thing is that
I think the geniuses do. I imagine the geniuses just reflash everything.
But do we know that that's the case?
We don't know what they're doing now. Go ahead, Alex.
All I was going to say is that I really think that we assume, when guys were sitting there with soldering irons fixing it, we looked at that like that was crazy. I mean,
That's clearly a one-way street.
I was like, you start opening up a soldering iron and you're on your own. But I think there's a certain assumption, at least that I have, at least on my Mac, that I'm going to have, that I'm going to be able to, I can do anything with software and eventually I can fix it. The idea that I could do something with software and then not be able to use my phone again is, I think it's reprehensible. I mean, I think that 1.1 is the biggest mistake Apple's made in a decade.
Andy, what were you going to say?
All I was going to say is that there are limits to how strongly I can react to this right now, only because I feel as though I need to collect a lot more information.
What would you like to know?
If at some point Apple put on a whiteboard, we must brick all these phones, we must punish people for having unlocked their phones, that is reprehensible. There is no defense for that, and it doesn't make any sense even from a business standpoint. However, if the point is that this unlocking software is doing things that are not just simply inconvenient for Apple, but a huge maintenance nightmare, where, I mean, it's if someone has moved into a house and replaced all the structural pillars in the house with corrugated styrofoam, and suddenly says, oh, by the way, that was a bad mistake. We want you to replace these things back. And then the question is going to be, well, how do we do that? Because you've just essentially cheesed all of the built-in code that we have in that device that's purpose-built for replacing the ROM. There might be instances in which it's easy to do, in which case Apple could be able to do it.
I think they could reflash.
That's the difficulty that I have with a lot of the reaction. People are saying, oh, I think they could do it if they wanted to. Well, we don't know what they can or can't do. I think it would really be, given the flack that they're getting for this, it would really be in their best interest to send out one engineer to give one interview to one influential person. I'm not even saying me. Just to simply explain, here's how these things work. Here's what we're dealing with here at the lab. We are very, very sure that we can't come up with a simple solution or even a complicated solution that we can distribute to our genius people to fix your phone.
Here's the risk.
The only thing we could do is swap you out with a brand new phone, and we're not sure we want to do that for 10,000 people.
And by the way, nobody knows if that's what the geniuses are doing. They may be swapping in a new phone. But here's the risk. If Apple steps forward and says that, and even if they believe it and they're proven wrong, then they really come up with egg on their face.
Well, I think they have now at this point anyway. I mean, they issued this warning, supposedly, saying this could happen. Well, obviously, they knew it was going to happen. I can't believe an entire campus.
They tested it. They found out it happened.
Yeah, they found out it would. But I think to cover their ass, they didn't say it will do this. They said it may do this. And I'm not sure why people did it unless they had to. And then they found themselves in a uncomfortable situation. However, if you look at the way the previous updates worked, you would watch the progress of the thing in iTunes. It would check your firmware. If it saw that the firmware was untouched, it would update the phone. If it saw that the firmware had been mucked with in some way, it went back and completely overwrote the firmware. So why not put a step in this process somewhere for unlocked phones that says, I'm sorry, I can't upgrade your phone. I'm going to leave you at 102, and that's it.
They could have done that. They clearly could have done that.
Yeah, and why not? So, it does seem vindictive.
How do you respond to that? How do you respond to that, Andy? I mean, that's true. You can't deny that.
If that is true, then, they're now in a position of having to explain why they didn't do
it. They just do a checksum on the firmware and the modem. They say, oh, boy, this is hacked, and say, step away from it. Say, we're not going to support you. We're not going to update you. We don't want to see you ever again because you've messed with your phone.
I have to admit that in this sort of a place, I'm responding not as a tech guy, but as a humanist. I find it really, really difficult for most companies, including Apple, to simply say, we have a decision A, we do something that doesn't destroy someone's telephone they paid $500 or $600 for, or decision B, we arbitrarily decide that just as a punitive gesture, we're going to wreck this phone. I don't believe that most companies, more than that, most people who work for most of these companies would say that, no, we definitely want to destroy a $500 phone.
I can see Steve Jobs doing that. I can see Steve Jobs doing that. I think he's very arrogant, and he's very – what do you think, Alex Lindsay? You probably know him as well as
anyone. I don't know. I don't know him at all.
Okay. I know him, and I think he would do that.
But the thing is that I would say that I don't think that they vindictively went after anything, but I do think that it was very, very poorly thought out.
They could have handled it better.
I mean, they're now looking at a class action suit, which I think might have teeth. You know, I mean, they've taken people who jumped on early, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them jumped on early and paid $200 extra, and then they bricked their phones. And the people that they bricked the phones of were the people that were probably the most excited about the phones.
Yeah.
You know, and so the thing is they've taken people who, you know, what we've learned from this process now is A, don't buy anything that Apple does immediately because, you know, you don't know what's going to happen next. Don't update it and for gosh sake, don't play with it. It's so un-Apple and it's so like Verizon, AT&T, the RIA and Microsoft.
I want to point out that we said when we talked about this phone for months beforehand, and Scott was one of them. This is something, in fact, I even said, I can't believe Apple is going to do this because once you start getting in bed with cell phone companies, this is the path you start down. And I'm sure the AT&T, this is a requirement from AT&T's point
of view. Yeah, and I just want to point out that Andy's making a good point that's probably going to get lost on a lot of people. We don't know what we know. We got a lot of surmising and guessing going on. It could be AT&T that's done this for all we know.
But Chris's point is good.
They send in the network handshake that causes the brick.
No, we don't. But Chris's point is absolutely valid, which is they could have looked at the phone and said, this is going to brick it. We won't give you the update. There's no technical reason they could have done that.
That's true. Unless there's a contractual reason they couldn't. But well, I agree.
I suspect AT&T certainly put some pressure on them to do something. Maybe not brick it. It was AT&T's interest that you force them to use the AT&T SIM.
Well, the thing is, it doesn't help AT&T because now, you know, if I have a brick phone, you know.
It may be that you can't force them to use an AT&T SIM, though. I mean, I think once you flash that, I mean, maybe you can't go back. I don't know.
Well, the two things we don't know, we think we know, but the two things we don't know are how intentional this was
right. And
exactly which company is behind it. Now, we have lots of ideas. I'm calling on both companies to step forward and say, okay, here's how you can, you know, get amnesty. Here's what you can do. There's simply no business case for it. And as you guys have, you know, concluded, there's no humanist case as well. I'm more interested in the business case. I'm not particularly sad for people that hack the phone. You guys know my position on that. But I do think it's silly to say, we don't want your $60 a month. I have just no idea in my mind who made that decision. And if Steve is that playing that kind of hardball, and they did this, if you got a long memory like I do, you go back to the Apple II when some of the first schools started pirating software and you saw the campaign he launched against them. He's played hardball before, and if he's doing it now, I do think it's a mistake. He is human. He can make mistakes, and I think it's a mistake, and I think they'll correct it.
So, this is something Sony has done, by the way, with the PSP. They've tried to brick PSPs.
One, and I think that this beyond the whole AT&T thing, you know, I think that not providing an SDK was fine, you know, but as people really started developing a lot of software and having a lot of fun with it, and Apple not really saying anything. In fact, it was one of those things where it seemed like Apple was looking the other way.
Jaws said he thought it was a good idea. He said it was okay with him.
And not only did it seem like it was okay, they have a history of it with the Apple TV of letting people just kind of run amok with it.
Yeah, they don't have any partners with it.
We're not going to go down that path.
They don't have any partners with the Apple TV either, though.
And look at the success of the Apple TV. Maybe that's something to say.
I don't think you could say it's less successful because it's more hackable.
I don't know. But I think that there was a lot of, you know, people were having a lot of fun with it. And I think that, you know, what I think now the problem is, you know, I haven't updated either and don't have any intention of updating anytime soon. There's nothing on it that's new that I particularly feel like I need. And, you know, I really like my, you know, the only thing I changed about it is my ringtones.
let's set aside the unlock for a moment and just talk about what Apple did for third-party apps. They didn't delete them, oddly enough. They just made them invisible. So you're saying, Alex, even that's going too far?
Well, no, I don't think that there's any need to do that. I mean, maybe there is. Maybe there's some kind of security thing and they've decided they're going to close it off. But I think that the PR problem with what they did, and they're not going to, I don't think they're going to go back or anything, but the PR problem with what they did is when we first got the phones, we didn't expect that we were going to be able to do very much. We talked about it here. I didn't expect that we were going to see that many applications.
No, neither did I.
But then Apple didn't really do anything. And for months, people started developing stuff and they started feeling like they had tacit approval just to keep on going. And you had people putting energy into it and people really enjoying great new little applications that they could play with, and then on all of a sudden it just boom, it's gone, you know. And it's I think it's just a communication issue, and we know that Apple doesn't communicate very often, but I think that I think that it's just a PR nightmare as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it just poorly managed, and I do also think that we're seeing why our existence as Mac users has been so nice in a kind of a warm atmosphere of we control everything. As soon as we have to be outside of that system, Apple dealing with AT&T, you know, I think that now we're seeing the challenges most likely that Microsoft has had, you know, since its beginning.
Why hasn't there been more bad press about this?
It's a small number of people. I keep telling you guys. It has not been.
But I was being driven from the airport on Friday early afternoon, and we were listening to NPR in the car, and it was a story on NPR. When was the last time like you had a Windows Mobile smartphone story on NPR?
Were they critical of Apple?
Yeah, they were saying, well, it was a news item, so they couldn't personally be critical, but they were reporting that the new update has caused a lot of phones not to work, a lot of added features that have been added on by users not to work, and they were also reporting that it was resulting in a lot of bad blood for Apple online.
All right.
And the thing is,
I'm surprised because I've gotten a lot of heat. At least 50% of the responses to my blog post, which got over 100 responses, were, oh, stop whining. And I'm not whining. I don't have a bricked phone. But I just think it's over the top of behavior on Apple's
part.
Well,
I think where the real PR problem is here is that, yes, it's a small number of people who have this problem. However, the people that did do it are the people that waited in line for two days, and people like us who are geeks and people who have a voice. So, yes, it's a small number of people that are affected. However, we're the noisy ones. You know, I mean, this whole show is about this. I was on KGO last night, and I was talking about it there, and I'm talking about it in my blogs.
Okay.
And everybody I know who has that kind of phone is doing the same thing, whether their phone was bricked or not.
I went out and bought a BlackBerry 8230 for my AT&T account because, frankly, I want a phone I can add third-party apps to, and I don't feel comfortable now adding third-party apps to my good phone, my real phone.
And I have to say that for the first time in a very long time, and maybe the first time since I can remember, I found myself cringing at what Apple's going to do next. You know, it was just kind of like this. You know, I don't normally have that relationship. My relationship with Apple is mostly Steve tells me what I'm buying tomorrow at a big event, and I just go out and buy it.
Yeah, just look around this table. I mean, now Andy's a journalist. Chris is a journalist. But Scott, you and I are fans, and we just buy the next thing that comes out from Apple.
I've ordered the next three things sight unseen.
Go out and kill, Mr. Jobs. We shall kill.
And I think that what this really affects, or it could affect if Apple's not careful, is the quote-unquote distortion field that Steve has. You know, that we're going to we're going to look and see how well this actually turns out. And it means that you don't have the instant reaction. You don't have the lines outside the Apple store. You don't have, that's the kind of stuff that you give up if this goes down too far.
Lay out my nightmare scenario of where I think this is going?
Yes, please do. We don't
mind. All right. Well, this is based on what they're doing with the iPods now. These current iPods now do not support video out except for devices that hold the special Apple authorization chip. So it's a double tax. So let's suppose that the one reason they wiped out these third-party apps is because Apple is indeed going to be selling third-party applications, but they're only going to do it through the iTunes store. That's the only method of delivery. So if you want to develop third-party apps, yes, Apple will give you an SDK. However, they have to be routed through the iTunes store, and when they are, Apple's going to take 10%, as they do with the Made for iPod program, for every application that goes through iTunes. And with successive updates, they will make sure that they wipe out any third-party app that is not tagged with some kind of iTunes stamp of approval. And that concerns me, because I've seen them do it with the iPod, and I'm afraid they're going to do it with the iPhone.
As far as applications go, you know, I don't have any problem with that, as long as they make an SDK and let people actually develop. If what you have to do is go through that process, doesn't bother me nearly as much.
I don't think that's so bad. That's certifying it. Yeah, I don't think that's as much of a nightmare.
Also, not that I think that less diversity is an advantage for users, but in defense of some sort of a tagging system, I've tried to find applications for my Windows mobile devices. I've tried to find applications for my Palm devices, and I will not find quality stuff that really works the way it's advertised. And there's so little free software for those platforms anyway.
I go to Handango. In a way, it's already de facto that way for most handheld users. They go to Handango. Handango, you know, handles the whole transaction. They take their cut.
Yeah, but in this case, Apple could very clearly define what is and what is not acceptable. So, for example, instant messaging, no, because they want to do SMS. They want to force people to SMS. And so if they're the arbiters of what we can and can't have, that's a problem.
By the way, just an update from I think I talked about using my phone. I didn't know how much it had cost me in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
$153.
Well, that's not awful. I mean,
not bad.
It's not 10,000.
50 cents in SMS. So I did 75 SMSs.
Oh, that's not bad.
That's what I paid. So it wasn't that bad. So anyway,
there is one larger thing, though. I'm sorry. I just remembered something that I had an idea, lost it, then got it back again. And now before it runs away from me again, Apple has to make a conscious choice over whether the iPhone is a cellular telephone or whether it's a new computing platform.
Right.
If they want it, they can choose to make it a cellular telephone, by which case they can control the firmware, they can control third-party apps, they can control everything they want. But if they want it to truly be a computing platform, they do have to open it up. They do have to be happy with lots of clever and industrial people doing things to and with this device that they didn't intend, and in that way making it a bigger and better and broader device.
I think what's happened here is that people who've hacked it have seen it as a computer, and AT&T is saying no, it's a cell phone.
Well, but I think a lot of us are very, I mean, a lot of us are excited about having other applications. If Apple built an aggressive, user-friendly software development, you know, kit you know, and let people do it. And even if Apple, even if it has to be blessed by Apple and go through the iTunes store, we get lots of people developing cool ideas and going through that process. And at least as a start, I think that would make it, that would make a big difference. It's just that Apple does not, this is in other cases, Apple does not have a history of dealing with their software developers particularly well, nearly as well as Microsoft.
Obviously. Erica Sedun, who has done more, I would say more than half of the third-party apps for the iPhone, has pointed out that now they are using digital signing and encryption. And she says it is highly unlikely, or it's going to be some time before anybody figures out how to put third-party apps back on this phone without Apple's help. In other words, it's a much thornier problem than it was, which is discouraging. I mean, it really does say, I mean, Apple's chosen to play hardball. They're locking it down.
I think the most problematic thing, if it had come out of the gate like this, I don't think it would have been nearly the same problem that Apple has now.
They should have done that. You're right.
Or at least communicate, we think this is a bad idea. We're going to lock it down and you shouldn't be developing stuff for it. But the fact that we went 2 or 3 months, you know, with it just kind of rolling out and people just slowly building up steam of, oh, this is going to be great. And then to knock it down, I think it's just a mess.
Yeah, she had a book contract she has to back out of.
Yeah, so it's...
Well, I mean, there are always solutions. I mean, again... If I told you about the 72 hours that I had to, all the things I had to change in the last 72 hours of finishing my iPhone book last week, there are always ways around it. There is always hope. And on top of everything else, the best way for Apple to take care of third-party apps, to make this a non-issue, is to give me the features that I want. I really don't want to write my own programs for the iPhone. What I want is I want a book reader or a document reader so that I can load documents and information directly on my iPhone
Andy,
storage.
For every user, there's different needs and different wants, and that's why you need a third-party, vital third-party team.
Well, what I was about to say is that I want this one critical feature, and if Apple provides me with this one critical feature so that I can have a list of information that I can access whether I have a cell signal or not, then I'm not going to go looking for it on the outside. If Apple develops and encourages a library of software that addresses every need that the users will have and makes sure that they notice where the holes are in the software library, I don't necessarily care that I have to go to the iTunes store in order to download this stuff. I don't care about who controls the platform. I don't care about who controls the direction.
But that's Chris's if. That's a big if.
So long as my needs are being, again, that's why, oh God. So long as my needs are being met, and again, there are going to be lots of individual users with individual needs. So long as those needs are being met, my beef is not that Apple doesn't allow third-party software. My beef is that the software I want isn't available for the iPhone.
Right.
So whatever means that makes that becomes possible, that's what makes me happy.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about iTunes, but Chris's point is, if Apple locks it down like that, it's up to them. And you know, clearly, right. Apple doesn't think we need a to-do list or cut and paste, and those seem to be fairly fundamental things.
Exactly. So long as they pick up the ball that they just dropped, that's fine.
Right.
You know, but they have to pick it up fast.
What a wonderful advantage they had. They basically said, well, geez, we have 100 people that became 1,000 people that was on the track to becoming 10,000 people who were willing to add features to this phone for us. So all we had to do was sit back, make sure that the iPod app keeps working, and count the money.
Yeah. So why didn't they? What's going on?
I think they want a piece of it. I think they want more. They've got...
Well, and I don't have any problem. I think actually, oddly enough, as someone who does software development, I don't have a problem with being... I'd love to be able to sell the software that I make for Final Cut Pro in the iTunes store.
Let me point out that Apple can have
a piece of it. I don't have a problem with it with Zelda. No one wants to deal with the e-commerce. I don't want to deal with the e-commerce. I'd rather just put it up on the... You can buy, you know, Conduit or DBMAT on the iTunes store. I don't care about that.
This is how PlayStation 3 works. This is how an Xbox 360 works. A license fee goes to Microsoft. They approve the products. Nintendo's done it for years. In fact, it was a response to a big problem in gaming. Atari let anybody develop any kind of crap for the Atari, and it killed the platform. So Nintendo said, wait a minute, we're going to make sure that everything that comes out for the Nintendo, for the NES, is good.
I think that's the way Apple should do it.
We've set the suck flag in the firmware to false. We will not allow you to reflash it.
I wonder if that is
I think they should control it for the very same reason I wasn't terribly upset that they didn't allow the third-party apps from the beginning, which is you want a stable environment, you want to ship a working phone that can actually make a call, that actually has good battery life, then you gradually roll out stuff that you know is tested and safe. And I do think that should happen, and I think it will happen.
But imagine that happening to your computer. I mean, look, let's shift this model. Let's say they said that with the app.
Well, that's, that goes back to the fundamental question, is it a platform or a phone? And I'm choosing to think of it as a phone.
Steve says it's not a phone. I mean, he says it's three different devices. So suddenly, now it's a phone in this respect.
Well, he's going to have to get an old episode of I Dream and Genie and get some help.
I'm buying a BlackBerry. That's really honestly. And I think that it's mostly because, I have third party apps on this hacked cell phone and I have a standard cell phone. But I want that freedom. And I'm what's taken Apple so long? What's the holdup here?
I mean, I hope I'm articulating this properly. I mean, you can buy, there are now at least two different open source cell phone platforms. And the problem is that both of them kind of suck at this point. I mean, they work as phones. They have kind of limited, nice Windows Mobile 2005 style apps on them, but they're not exciting. They're not interesting. And then to me, they're not particularly useful. An iPhone out of the box is more useful and more interesting than any open source phone that I've used. So I'm not saying that we should all make sure that we manacle ourselves to whatever terms that Apple wants. I'm saying is that the goal is not to have access to any software we want. Everybody's goal as individuals is to have the software they want to use. So if Apple, again, if they're like Dr. Doom, and Dr. Doom, as he was written by John Byrne, the good years back in the 80s, where every single he's a dictator, he's a tyrant, but everybody who lives under his rule is absolutely thrilled to have him as a governor because they're well fed, they're well taken care of. Anything they want to do, Doom will make sure that there's a way that they can do what they want to do. All they have to do is acknowledge Doom as their one royal ruler.
I need a bell to ring for the first comic book reference in every episode now.
Sponsored by DC Comics. DC Comics, countdown, now issue 28. Will Sue Dibny come back from the dead to rescue Wonder Woman?
What else is there to say about what happened? Have we covered the topic? Should we move on to the really big story, which is the new AOL desktop for Mac?
Let's move on.
You really want to talk about the AOL desktop for Mac?
No, but I think there are a couple other things to talk about.
Yes, there are, including the AOL desktop for Mac. But we'll move on from that. There are a number of updates, by the way, went out for iWork and iLife and new firmware for a lot of the computers. You certainly should run your software update. I was surprised. Boy, almost all the iLife apps. I think all the iLife apps were updated, weren't they?
Yeah, there are about seven updates altogether, depending on what computer you use. And I installed all of them with no problem. Everything works.
Apparently, iWeb needed it, right?
Yes.
There was something wrong with it. I don't use iWeb, but people were saying there's a real problem. By the way, one thing that it was introduced with 1.1.1, which is probably a bug, and I read this in Apple Insider, you can keep the sound coming out through your Bluetooth headset. It's a complicated hack. I'll put a link in the show notes. But if you go to voicemail, you select your Bluetooth headset. Listen, I don't know if you have to listen to the voicemail or not, and then go back. Everything coming out of the computer, out of the iPhone, including keyboard clicks and music, goes to your wireless headset. And I don't know if that's A2DP. It's probably not stereo, but at least you can now use your wireless headset for music. How long before Apple fixes that?
Bricks your headset.
That's clearly a bug on their part. I don't think that's an intentional.
I think that might, seriously, I've gotten to the root of some of these so-called bugs. And it turns out that it was one engineer at the company who wanted this to work. And so he just basically decided something that he would know how to do, but no one else would.
Well, it was discovered pretty quickly. Hey, whether this is germane or not, Steve Jobs is now... actually, he's slipped a little bit. He is now the 56th richest man in the world with an estimated worth of $5.7 billion.
Yeah, look, he's doing it. So,
I'm really sorry to see that there are 55 below me.
This is Leopard Month. Are we excited about Leopard with all this attention to the iPhone? Let's not forget, Leopard's supposed to come out in October.
I thought
keyword is supposed to.
Yeah. Well,
I think I thought the other thing that was interesting was the announcement related to boot camp expiring.
Boot camp expires,
And it's coinciding with Leopard's release.
Apple has issued a warning to boot camp users. Beta software is on track to expire this month. It expires.
Break everything. Break the beta. Break it all.
But what they are saying is it expires when Leopard becomes available. So in a way, this is a backhanded way of saying Leopard will come out this month, right?
Yeah. I'm really concerned about that. I've not seen stuff happening here that makes me think that Leopard is, I don't know. Maybe they've got all the good stuff done. It's like the last launch of Apollo before they put men on the men in the vehicle. We had a lot of problems, but they felt they understood what the problems were, so they launched Apollo 6 as planned. But I'm just not seeing a really good stable shippable operating system at this point.
It looks like the last update was what, about a week ago Friday.
And 21st.
The 21st.
We've seen a commercial that makes us think it's going to be late.
What did the commercial say?
It says Leopard, the new Vista.
I'm wondering if Leopard's going to come out and people are going to be disappointed. If they're going to say, well, there's not, you know, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on Leopard to be a Vista, a big upgrade. It's not, but we should point out it's not 11, it's 10.5.
I don't know that's really true. No. Apple has certainly rolled out lots of really cool new features, but they haven't really been banging the drum about it. I don't know whether that's because it's been drowned out by bigger stuff, namely the iPhone. But I just don't get a vibe from Apple that says that they're prepared to say to the world, oh my God, if Jesus Christ comes tomorrow and takes your soul to heaven, you'll be pissed off because that means you'll only get to use Leopard for 40 hours before you go to heaven.
Now that's the ad I want to see.
I should work for Apple. Boy, would we sell more. All you got to do is bring Jesus Christ into it do it in a way that will not be biblical in nature. And boy, will people be on your side. That's how America works.
So we go from the Jesus phone to the Jesus big cat.
Yeah, but I do think that people have expectations of Leopard.
And I think they
not
do.
Because Apple is doing it, but a lot of it is partly due to the delay.
Yeah.
You know, it was supposed to ship in the summer, and now they said, no, we're going to wait until October because we need these resources. However, people would then say, okay, well, you've had these extra months to really do something spectacular here. And although we can't talk specifically about stuff that we've seen in the beta, if indeed we have, the stuff that we have seen on the web, for example, people are having a real hard time with a lot of these interface things. Menu bar being sort of translucent, and the dock has just sort of gotten strange because the analogy doesn't work anymore. You put it on the side, and what? We've got a shelf on the side, and
everything's falling off.
Yeah, what's it doing there? And
Well, they have issued an advisory that says if you try to move the spots around on Leopard, it will brick it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So, and I'm a little worried. I am a little worried about all the software I'm running and how it's how compatible it will be. I've seen some updates of software to work with Leopard. And, you know, presumably developers have had a lot of time to work with it. But
I'm sticking with OS 9.
Well, I'm wondering, I mean, should we, the temptation is going to be great to install Leopard right away.
Not happening here.
Really?
Yeah, I'm in a production environment, so, you know, I can't afford
that. I can't even think about it.
Yeah, I mean,
we have a permanent Windows sticky note on the monitor that says, do not install or run any OS updates without permission.
Well, I can tell you that I have a separate Mac that's designed for Leopard. And at least twice in the past 2 or 3 months, I've gone from having a working thing to a not working thing, you know, where it's like, okay, FireWire disk mode,
right?
Erase, start all over again.
Right. Well, I'm with Chris. I think that, whether rightly or wrongly, people are expecting a big, big update. I think there's a lot of eye candy. Is there a lot of stuff under the hood? Alex, you're probably looking at this pretty closely that you think is going to make a big difference, big updates to core audio or core video.
You know, I have to admit, there's core animation, which I don't think is going to make any kind of real effect on what we're doing tomorrow. But it's going to do a lot of the same things that core audio and core video have done to and core image. You know, have done to other areas. I mean, the things that we're seeing like Acorn and Pixelmator and everything else are partially a result of Core Image and a lot of the
right.
stuff that they're being handed. I know for a lot of stuff that we do, when we're developing stuff to the underlying layers, the great thing is I don't have to figure out all these different pieces that I'd have to figure out on a PC. I just say, well, just go get me the video and then I'm going to do this work on it. And I think that's going to make a lot of things easier. To be honest with you, as far as the user features go, I haven't really been paying much attention. I'm pretty happy. I think the problem that I have is that I'm pretty happy with the operating system I have now. You know, I don't have this. There hasn't been a lot of what I've seen from, except for Spaces, maybe. There hasn't been a lot that I've seen that I go, oh, that'd be really something that I need to have. you know, and that, I think that's the interesting thing for me is that I'm not really just waiting to update. You know, we'll probably update sometime in January. You know,
I can't wait to update. Chris Breen,
well, I can't afford to. I mean,
I understand you don't want to risk it. Chris Breen, will you? Obviously, you'll update some machines. You have to for review.
Yeah, I'll have to update some of the machines, and I'm looking forward to it. But again, my production machine's not going to be updated. I'll certainly play around with stuff. I want to see check on compatibility.
Okay,
everybody should.
I'll be the guinea pig. I'm going to put it on every machine the day it comes out.
Really?
Just make sure that your computer is not connected to any network, because we could have a Skynet sort of situation if it continues to be as buggy as.
I am the voice of user control. You are mine.
Game set there at 14 p.m.
Right. So you're going to be recording MacBreak Weekly then through telephone and.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I'll tell you the truth. I recorded on a Windows machine anyway, so I'm safe.
Oh my God!
I know. Oh. Shocking! Shocking!
My bits, my lovely, lovely audio bits.
I'll tell you, if...
They're being touched by Bill Gates. I don't approve.
I may just run out and buy this Gateway 20th anniversary Mac. I mean, I'm sorry, it's the one. What am I saying? What was I thinking? Gateway's got an all-in-one computer called the One.
Are they still in business?
They were bought by Acer.
What? Yeah.
Acer, so this is really an Acer. Interesting, a number of people have said, oh, it's an iMac, but really... If you look at it next to the 20th anniversary Mac, it looks a lot like it. Does anybody still have a 20th anniversary?
I never had one. I should have picked one up when they were cheap.
I wish I'd had one, yeah. Look good on the shelf.
I never keep a computer long enough to know what the last one was.
That was the pretty... Do you remember that one? That was one of the speakers on the side. It was flat. It only had looked like, I don't know, a 12-inch screen or something. It was a tiny little screen, but...
Yeah, they released it very much like the iPhone. They put it under glass at expos. Yeah. You kind of go around and steam up the glass and look at the thing.
But it did not catch on. It was not a popular product.
No, it was horribly expensive when it came out. Yeah. Tens of thousands of dollars.
I do think that I know the market for this Gateway, the One. If you look at a picture of it, I think that Apple should buy like one of them for every Apple store, spray paint it red, put a new plastic faceplate on it, because the exact same screen size and proportions as a new iPod Nano. They should use them as jumbo demonstrator Nanos.
You're right.
Product red, you know.
Well,
details on it. You've got Lilliputian user interface.
If you crash the iPhone demo at the AT&T stores, guess what comes up? Windows.
Oh,
it's not running on a Mac.
The fact that you're capable of crashing it.
There you go. That shows you right there.
Well, it's been bricked now, so it won't even launch.
let's brick the demo, see how they feel. Let's see. Apple's OS X market share up, according to Net Applications. The way they do this is interesting. They actually look at browser uses. And assuming the browsers aren't lying, Apple's worldwide installed base rose to 6.6% last month. A lot of new Intel systems out there. Safari also showing healthy share gains, which means I would guess that a lot of these new Macs are new users. They're new to Mac and they just use Safari because that's what it comes with.
Are they tracking Safari on Windows use? Or did they separate that out?
Ah, that's a good question. Maybe they are. Let me see if I can figure that out from the article. I'm reading the article from Apple Insider, which has got pie charts.
Oh, well, that must be reliable.
They look like they were done in open office, I have to say. There's no way this is numbers. Net applications, uses of Safari browser up. It showed the largest share gain of any other browser during September. Still, you know, it's 5%. But, you know, I have to tell you, when I see these graphs, Internet Explorer on this one is 77%. And then I look at the graphs on my website. Internet Explorer is the like trailing fourth, well behind Firefox, Safari, I think even Opera. It just shows you, if you look at the overall audience versus a tech savvy audience, is a big difference.
It shows you the difference between the power of what comes pre-installed on a machine versus something you have to go out and get.
True. Net Applications doesn't tell us how it does its methodology, so it's not clear whether it's Windows or I don't think. Can you think there's widespread adoption of Safari on Windows?
No, I don't think so. I think some people probably played with it and you know, and they said, oh, good, there's somebody playing with it, and that counts. We'll put check in that column. And
also, to be fair, Firefox is much prettier than Safari. Even features aside, Firefox looks more appealing than Safari on Windows. because it works great, it works fast, but they seem to have shoehorned the interface a little bit to make it work as a Windows window, and I'm just not sure if it doesn't have that curbside appeal that Firefox has.
Yeah. How are we feeling about the Amazon store 1 week afterwards? And we didn't get to ask you about how you feel about it, Chris Breen. I've been using it. I love it.
Yeah. I absolutely love it. I think it's wonderful. I don't care if it's Universal's plot to take over the world and destroy iTunes. It makes it very easy to do this. It integrates very nicely with iTunes. I like being able to buy stuff cheaper without DRM. Yeah. And so, I'm a sucker for it.
Yeah. It is a lot cheaper. I mean, if you include the DRM price for iTunes is what $1.29?
And most $1.29, and most single tracks are $0.89, so you're saving 40 cents.
40 cents, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Buy an album, and you'll be able to buy a latte.
Yeah, and some of the albums, but then we'd be in a Starbucks, and my God, I'd have to use the iPhone, and oh no.
I have to admit that I am finding myself looking more often I really want to get that album, and I go, well, maybe I'm going to go to Amazon and just see if it's there. Because it's the DRM thing, and being able to get 256 DRM is the money doesn't really. I mean, I have to. I mean, it's not like money doesn't matter, but it's the difference between the price and the songs doesn't really matter that much to me if I'm looking for something. But what really does matter is that I don't have, you know, it's a much higher quality track, and I'm not going to have to go through any kind of process to DRM it.
Right. Go ahead, Andy. What were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was just going to say that I'm not sure if Apple is doubly unhappy about this, but I find myself using iTunes to look for music and to sample the music. But then my next step before clicking the buy button is to go to Amazon.com, see if it's available there. I go back to iTunes if it's not available on Amazon.
I have to say, though, as a test case, I asked my daughter, because I think we do that. And I told my daughter about it, and I said, oh, please, before you buy anything, I'd really appreciate it if you would go to Amazon and check to see if it's there first. Because then you could get an unprotected version. We could put it on all our computers instead of just five of them. And she said, no, that's too much trouble. So, well, and I think she might be a reasonable test case, actually.
No, I think that is, because I think iTunes definitely still has the advantage that it's much more convenient. You can find things very easily at the iTunes store. If you go into Amazon, you're still using that Amazon web browser interface, so it's not as easy to find
stuff.
And
she doesn't, unlike us, she doesn't buy a lot of stuff. I don't think she buys any stuff on Amazon, so she's not familiar with it.
Yeah.
She just said, she rejected it out of hand. She said, no, I don't care.
It gets back to kind of a universal problem. It's not even really a problem. It's that we're not normal users. And for normal users, they have a real, they hit a real glass ceiling when something becomes good enough for them.
Yeah. Once they figured it out, they don't want to learn something new.
Well, not even necessarily that, but if it takes 5 minutes to give somebody 90% of a topic, such as, you know, downloadable digital music, that's usually good enough for them. But if you're going to say, look, if you have another hour to give, I can give you, I can give you that extra 10% that will make it so much bigger and more wonderful for you. They'll say, no, I'm good.
I got 90. 90 is all I need. Yep. Well, I think you're right. I think that's actually a good rule of thumb. All right. I think we've covered all the stories today. I'd like to get our picks going. Chris Breen, I won't start with you because I'm springing on you. So think for a moment. Let's get Andy and not go. Oh, before we do the picks, let me do my Audible pick. The show is sponsored by Audible.com, as it has been for some time now. We do thank Audible. It's a great way, and I know a number of us use Audible, a great way to listen to books instead of reading them. And there's always downtime in the car or in the garden or in the gym when you can listen to a book and just learn so much. 45,000 titles growing all the time, nonfiction and fiction, business, humor, radio shows, all sorts of stuff. Well, we want you to give it a try by going to audible.com/MacBreak, Audible, audible.com/MacBreak. You get a credit toward a free book when you sign up there, and there's no cost or obligation if you decide to drop Audible. You keep the book. But we also want to remind you, you can get a free chapter of the new Chopin manuscript, which is Audible's first original production, a book written by 15 different thriller authors, one chapter after another. It's a great idea. And you can hear that first chapter written by Jeffrey Deaver absolutely free. Now, everybody can stream it, but we've got a special place you can go to download and put it on your iPod. That's audible.com/freechapter, audible.com/freechapter. And don't forget, if you want to sign up for Audible, you don't have to get that free chapter, but if you decide you want to, I think you will, audible.com/MacBreak. I use it. I love it. I think you will too. audible.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support. Now, time for Andy Iannocco's pick of the week.
Audible or Mac?
Either. Do you have a book you want to mention?
I have a book. I have a Mac pick that I'm just tingling. I think it's so great.
Do the Mac pick if you well, you know what? I'm not going to tell you what you do. You do whatever you want.
Okay, I'll save the Audible pick for next week because I tend to hog the Audible picks. But there is, I have found what I feel to be the best iPhone online app ever. It might be the greatest online app I have ever seen. And it fills a huge gaping hole in the iPhone user experience.
I think I know what you're going to say, but I'm going to write down my answer and put it in an envelope right here. And and I'll open it after you make your pick. Okay.
Sis boom ba.
What is the sound a sheep makes when exploding? No, I'm sorry.
You are correct, sir.
Okay, go ahead. Your pick.
After that buildup. We have seen the first day the iPhone was available, everybody who had some sort of Web 2.0 portal, who wanted to get some ink, would announce that, oh, well, we have an online app for the iPhone that will let you create and edit Microsoft Office documents on the iPhone. And it's good and it's wonderful and it's completely Microsoft Office. And you say, okay, that's cool. Then you go visit it and you find out that they've had this existing web-based version of Office. And all they did was they changed a couple of style sheets to sort of make it kind of work on the iPhone, but not really, because they didn't resize the screen so that it fits on the iPhone screen, and stupid things like you can open up a spreadsheet, but you can't edit anything because nothing can cause the on-screen virtual keyboard to come up. 2 weeks ago, about this version of Edit Grid came online for the iPhone. You can see the desktop version of the spreadsheet program at editgrid.com, EDITGRID. But they've also now created an iPhone edition of Edit Grid. So if you point your iPhone then to iPhone.editgrid.com, what you have is a real sophisticated, fudgy nougat-centered version of a spreadsheet application for the iPhone. When you see the interface, you will think it's a native application that's running because it has a very, very mature interface with pop-ups and push buttons and all that other kind of cool stuff. Not only that, though, it's so well-designed. It's designed for humans. For all those buttons that are on there, it's really clear and it's really, really easy to use. You can upload existing spreadsheets to editgrid.com, use it on the desktop, use it on the iPhone. You can create brand new spreadsheets. Those spreadsheets are live documents, so that if you want to do recalculations, if you want to add new information, if you want to sort on tables, it'll do that. It does charts. It will do small spreadsheets. It'll do huge ones. Not only that, but this is what I love. I love when I see an application where somebody stopped all the development and said, look, guys, we have to think about how this is going to actually work out. If we stop for 30 minutes right now and plan this out, we can make it 40 times better. And this one feature they have, when you open up a spreadsheet, the first question it asks you says, okay, look, we can open this in one of three different ways. If it's a huge spreadsheet, we can sort of cut down on all the touchy-feely interface to make it work faster. However, if it's smaller and more manageable, we can make it look a lot cooler when you're actually using this, when you're scrolling around. But it's up to you. We're not going to make that decision for you and frustrate you. We're going to simply give you these options. Just tell us what to do, and we will do it. It's wonderful. You sign up for the service. It's free, like most web-based services. It's free up to a certain point. If you want to put loads and loads and loads of spreadsheets on there, and if you want to share it with lots and lots and lots of people, you can do it that way. But in terms of having an ability to build lists and sort lists and put databases on my iPhone and add and sync those databases, EditGrid.com needs to be in every single person's desktop and iPhone bookmark folder. I just found out about this like 4 days ago, and it's been open tab in my Safari browser on my browser, both on my desktop and my iPhone, ever since. It's wonderful.
It's pretty impressive, I have to say. It actually looks a lot better than Google Spreadsheet.
Google Spreadsheet looks terrible compared to this. It's not even the best online spreadsheet program. This looks like something you would pay $50 for as a downloadable app. You can't see where this is an online thing. It's beautiful.
Very cool. That is editgrid.com, and there is a version available for the iPhone as well if you want to use it. You can. And by the way, no hack required.
Yes.
When you started talking about an iPhone app,
I
thought, oh my God, it's iPhone.editgrid.com. If you're on an iPhone right now listening to us and you want to try it out. Alex Lindsay, your pick.
So I have one. I'm pretty sure that I haven't recommended this in the past, and I going through picks of the week. I just can't remember. I'm using it so much right now that I felt like, oh, I should really talk about this because I just don't remember. I was looking through MacBreak picks of the week. And by the way, this is a great site. I haven't been to it before. And what would be really great is somewhere we had a list, just the list instead of descriptions, because I can't.
Oh, come on. Just use the search. There's two of them. There's mbwpicks.com and there's mbwpicksoftheweek.com. They both have a search.
Where's the search? Oh, see, I don't know how to use a web page. That's my problem. So we've talked about this. I'm a little broken here. So the one that I'm using a lot, and if I haven't said it before, even if I've said it before, it's been a long time ago, and I should say it again, is, have I talked about Google SketchUp?
No, I don't think you have.
Okay, so this is
you're
either...
Right. We've done it. We've covered it so much on the TV show, and you've talked about it, and we've covered it, of course, on Mac Break.
Right, but I don't think we've ever talked about it on MacBook.
As far as I can tell, we haven't.
And it is such a fun application to work with. Now, this used to be a company called Atlast, and they were out of Boulder, Colorado, and they got bought by Google a while ago. And Google's really used it as a way for you to build content into Google Earth, which I do think we've talked about, and it's an amazing application. You kind of have to have it. So what you can do is you can now there's two versions of it. One of them, I think, is the Google SketchUp. There's one that's free. So then there's SketchUp Pro, and SketchUp Pro is mostly used by architects and people who are doing pre-visualization for film and people who are just sketching out ideas, and they actually want to build it as part of a larger pipe. But Google SketchUp, the base version, has all the features except it just doesn't export to other 3D applications. It has limited rendering. But outside of that, you can do all this modeling, and the modeling is not really hard. I know a lot of people think of 3D modeling, and they're like, oh, I don't know what I can, you know, I don't know where I'm going to go with that. With Google SketchUp, what you can do is you can actually, you draw it like you would, you just draw little lines and I just want to make these a little higher. And then you just draw a window in and pop it out. And then you draw a little roof and you pop the middle of it up. And it's very, very straightforward. There's great tutorials that will actually play in the application. So you can like play them for a little while and stop and play with it a little bit. Really, really well thought out application. And if you just want to play with a little bit of 3D, and what I use it for is doing, we're working on doing some, putting together a little theater / booths and everything else at Macworld. And so I'm planning out like how we're going to do all of this stuff, and I'm just able to pop these little models out. Now I have a lot of other 3D applications at my disposal, and this is the one that I'm choosing to use.
Really?
Because
wow.
I can do it really, really fast, and I can just move things around, and now there's a lot of things it doesn't do that I like to do with the other 3D applications, whether it's Modo or Cinema 4D or XSI or any of the other ones that I use. But this one is a great one if you're just kind of sketching things out and I just kind of want to block things out. And you can build a lot of detail into them. Now, if you go the next step, you can build, for instance, a model of your house. And we've talked about this on MacBreak and on the lab. You can go into Google Earth and say, I want to build, you find your house on satellite. And then you can hit send that to Google SketchUp. So if you have Google SketchUp, it'll send that image that you can see there in Google Earth to Google SketchUp. And so now you see your house. Now, if you build it in the same scale, so if the outside of your house, for instance, or any building you want to have fits the outline on the satellite, you can build it up. You can use photographs to just kind of do what we call photogrammetry. So you can take a couple photographs from the ground and use them to help model your little building. And then you can, from Google SketchUp, you can say, send that back to Google Earth. It will send that model back and place it in the world exactly where it needs to be. In there. Now you can then, if you want, now that's just for you, but if you want to, you can then send that to what's called 3D Warehouse, which is something that anybody can get a hold of. And if you load it, there's lots of people who are posting stuff. I mean, you can get everything from, the towers in Toronto, the CN Tower in Toronto to there's buildings in Harare, Zimbabwe. There's almost all of Kampala, Uganda is built out in 3D models.
Wow, that's interesting. I wonder why that is. Is that because of you?
No, it's not because of me. The only reason I discovered it is because I was using Google Earth to figure out how to get to a meeting while I was in Kampala. And suddenly I have this thing that's always downloading the 3D warehouse stuff, and suddenly this whole 3D model just popped up of Kampala.
And, terrible how built up virtual Zimbabwe has become in the past couple of years.
I just can't remember anymore.
It's funny talking to the guys because our Pixelcore members are actually building the buildings in Harare, because they do other work for Google Earth. So they build other models, from all over the world. And but the so but more as for fun, they're doing it there. And the big sensitivity is, yeah, you can you see lots of models of business buildings. You just don't see any models, oddly enough, of the government buildings. You know, you got to keep those things out of hand. But it's a really, really fun application. If anyone has if people want to get started, if they just want to start playing with something in 3D, they just want to start thinking about what that is. It's a free that they can just start hacking out little models. I would highly suggest downloading it. It doesn't cost you anything, and well worth the time.
And we have a couple of Mac breaks that talk about SketchUp, including a couple of interviews with the folks from school who do a great DVD for learning SketchUp if you want to.
It's the best training you're going to find on it. So, I mean, school, you know, and that's Alex, you know, Alex Oliver and company.
Nice guys, too. And I'd like to give them a plug. So SketchUp, and if you want to learn more, school makes the great DVDs for SketchUp. I'm going to mention a program I probably mentioned before. Red Sweater Software, Daniel Jaikut's company, has picked up Mars Edit, which is a really handy blog editor that I had used before when it was still with Ranchero Software. And I was really kind of glad to hear that Red Sweater had bought it because, frankly, you know, Ranchero wasn't keeping it up to date. And there was a lot of potential there. Well, the new 2.0 version of Mars Edit has come out, and well worth it. I use it. I have a WordPress blog now. And Andy, I know you're going to WordPress, and it's something to look at. If you want a client that will post to WordPress, WordPress actually has pretty good posting capability, web-based code-based posting capability, but it's really nice to have the ability to script your posting, to add pictures from Flickr, to put HTML tags in and all. And I just really love Mars Edit. And so I wanted to give Daniel a little bit of a plug and point people to red-sweater.com. They do a lot of stuff, but Mars Edit is the one in particular that I think is well worth looking at. You can download and try before you buy if you decide you want to keep it $30. Well worth it. That's how I do all my blog posting now, and it's really increased my output quite a bit. Off to Scott Bourne, who has a pick, no doubt.
Yes, I do. I do some consulting here and there, and I charge by the hour. I've tried various pieces of software to track my hourly time, and somebody sent me a link to this thing, which I just started using a couple of weeks ago, called On the Job by Stunt Software. And I have to tell you, it's pretty brilliant. It's only $25, and it lets you, you know, check your time on a job. If you're doing consulting, you start a clock, so to speak. And there's a lot of programs that do that. But what's cool about this one is that will automatically create an invoice for you. So you just, when you're done, you get an invoice and it comes in any form, like a PDF, whatever. And you can customize the invoice. And if you forget to turn off your clock, which I sometimes do, it's got an idle time checker that reminds you, you know, when the last time you did something was. So you can kind of approximate when you actually were done working for that person and doing that consulting job. And it's from a company called Stunt Software. And it has a free trial. It's $25.
Very good. Very good. Check it out. I don't work for anybody, so I don't really need it. But
well, and you know, you don't have to use this in that format. I mean, if you wanted simply to be able to use some sort of time tracker to see how much time you're spending on something, like how much
should time, be using this.
Well, you should be using it to check your time on Halo 3.
Way too much. I don't want to. Truth is, I don't want to know. That's the real problem on that one. So that is I don't know, 1/120th of an Alex.
Yeah, it's a pretty cheap pick for me.
Expensive pick. By the way, I wanted to clarify that Mars Edit isn't just WordPress. It's also Blogger, Typepad, Movable, Type, Live Journal, Drupal, Vox, all of the different blog platforms. It's very compatible. And by the way, Andy, it was an Edit Grid that I had in this envelope. Ooh. I thought you were going to mention Navizon, which is an amazing third-party app that does, in fact, require a hack of the iPhone. But it adds...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It kind of adds, you've tried it, so I'll get your impressions. It doesn't work in Petaluma because, unfortunately, you can't add points, but it's using Wi-Fi access points, known Wi-Fi access points, and known cell towers to pinpoint you. In urban areas, at least where I've tried it, including Vancouver and San Francisco, it does a great job, but there's no way to add these points, and I'm sure the clients on other phones let you add points. How does it work in Boston?
It's very, very spotty.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the place where I downloaded it was in my house. Which is not like out in the sticks, but it's about a 20-minute drive into Boston, and it didn't find nothing.
Yeah, Petaluma so, either. Yeah,
yeah, and I think we've way before we've talked about this that the first user experience, the first click experience, tends to define how I react to it. I didn't really launch it again, even though I had it in the back of my mind that, well, gee, I bet if I go downtown, I'll have a better
shot. I think it probably would work downtown,
yeah.
It's and the problem is you need to be able to edit and add these points, and for some reason the iPhone version doesn't let you. They claim 80,000 downloads of the iPhone version, which is interesting.
That might should taper off starting about now.
That'll slow down.
Good job for the first couple of weeks there, guys. Now go get some waffles.
Get a real job. moving on to Chris Breen and our final pick of the week. Hey, Chris.
Hey. I have one, but I have to check because I didn't listen to last week's show. I'm sorry. But did anyone mention Radio Shift last week?
No. This is brand new, though, and I'm glad you're mentioning it.
Yeah, this is from Rogue Amoeba. It's called Radio Shift, and the idea is it's TiVo for radio, sort of. And it's a $32 program, and the idea is that you launch this thing, and it goes into a database of radio programs, and this database is provided by a company called Radio Time, which had a Mac client last year. I wrote about it a lot last year for Playlist because I liked it. But they never really got a Mac client that was very stable, so it was sort of useless. And finally, it was a subscription service for $39 a year. I liked it enough. I subscribed. Then I got a notice a few months later saying, you know, we're not keeping up with the Mac side of this thing at all. So you can have your money back. Nice.
Well, that's nice. Wow.
Yeah, that was nice. But Rogue Amoeba then got into talks with these folks and they said, you know, I think we can build an interface for this thing that is going to work out. And the result was Radio Shift. So you can go in and you can search for program by the call letters. You can also search by content, and it will pull up a pages that will come up with various hits. So if you're looking for NPR stuff, for example, great, it will do that. But it will also find much more obscure stuff. Anything that's basically being streamed over the web in real format or Windows Media or QuickTime, it will pick this up. So I have a local station here that plays a program on the NPR station called Soul Shack. And it is the best 2 hours of soul music you've never heard. And unfortunately, it happens during a time when I usually can't listen to it. Well, now I've got Radio Shift set up so that it automatically records it at 192 kilobits per second AAC. And then it drops it into iTunes so that I can listen to that stuff later. It also works with Griffin Technologies Radio Shark. So if you're trying to record local programming, it will do the same thing there. And again, Radio Shift is made by Rogue Amoeba, the same people that bring you Audio Hijack
and
Vision. Yeah. So, yeah, they do good work. I was really excited to see this thing come out because I do like Radio Time and the idea of being able to time shift radio. One thing it doesn't do is you can't record live programming. So I can listen to a program live, but there's no record button there. And I've talked to Paul over at Rogue Amoeba, and he said, yeah, not in 1.0, but we're certainly looking at that kind of thing. And also more TiVo-like functions where you can be listening live and then you can go backwards in time, or you can pause and then skip forward. That's not there yet, but again, that's something they're looking at.
Would you do me a favor and search for Tech Guy in there? I just wonder if we're in the database. I bet we're not. Bet
I will look. It's on my other computer.
I bet you anything we're not. But maybe I can urge Radio Shift.
love that program.
You use it?
Let me tell you how I found it. I sent Paul the most angry, spittle-filled email, which I hope he understood. Thankfully,
it
he understood.
It came from love.
Was sarcastic.
Oh.
Because I have a chapter in the new iPhone book about how to, you know, the theme of the book is how to get anything and turn it into a form that you can keep on your iPhone. And one of them is here's how to get, like, the streaming radio broadcast. And so I wrote the chapter about a month ago, and so, okay, the final pass, I've promised this to my editor today, even though, you know, we're down to the wire. Now I'm just going through, okay, Audio Hijack Pro, $32. I better double-check that price. And then I hit the web page and see just 23 hours earlier, this awesome program got written. It got released with no public beta, no preview, and I wrote an email to Paul right away saying, you son of a so-and-so, you knew how busy I am, you knew I've only had like one shower in the past 4 days, I'm working on this book so much, the least you can do is send me a damn unlock code, you bastard.
That's very funny.
So, I sent the email at like, I don't know, like 12 o'clock. I got an instant message from a friend of mine at 12:02 saying, Paul wants your home phone number. Should I give it to him? So we had a nice conversation, but yeah, it's an awesome. What I love most about it is that if you don't know what you're looking for, it'll just throw up a map of the world. And you can say, gee, I wonder what's going on in Costa Rica. And there's some green dots over Costa Rica. So you click on the dots, and now you're looking at everything that's available in Costa Rica. I love this. I wasted so much time on this just looking for cool stuff. Because on top of everything else, I'm a big addict of BBC streaming programming. And just the ability to grab everything that I like from the BBC. I used to use it do it with Audio Hijack, but you know, the ability to simply search for when's Book at Bedtime on. Cool, just record it for me. Don't make me have to type numbers. Yeah.
I wonder how many shortwave radios are sold anymore these days. I mean, you can listen to everything on the internet, and with devices like this, I mean, programs like this, it just makes it so easy. I have to try it out. See if you can tape the tech guy with it. That would be nice.
Yeah.
All right, that is from Rogamiba.com, and that one is, how much is that, did you say?
$32.
$32, good price. Well, I thank you, everybody. I think we're going to bring back Mac Wines in the next few weeks, because we haven't done a wine in a while. And
actually, all we did was wine today.
Yeah, I guess we whined a little bit. We had one big wine fest.
I don't have my phone anymore. I don't have my software anymore.
You don't need it. Andy Inaco is working on his new site, but until then, it's still at CWOB.com. And, of course, you can catch him in the Chicago Sun-Times regularly talking about all things tech. Alex Lindsay's at the Pixel Corps, pixelcorps.com. If you'd like to join the Pixel Corps, it's a great troop, a guild of multimedia artists who learn and get work together. Pixelcorps.com and pixelcorps.tv is the home for all of their various productions. None dare call them podcast. Scott Bourne has a few of those shows on his sites, applephoneshow.com, ilifezone.com, podango.com, and he's always a welcome and much beloved figure here. I'll share this with you. I should ask your permission, but Scott sent me a note after the last one saying, do you want me to quit the show? Do you want me to leave? I said, Scott, what are you talking about? What would we do without you? You're the best part of the show. You're the fun part of the show. So, no, we love Scott.
Well, it's the 25 death threats every week that really the pause.
So Scott says, I want to be known for something else. Have you picked something else?
Yeah, I'm going to start talking a little bit more about photography. We're doing some photography. So, I mean, I'm still, I can never shed the iPhone. In fact, I just signed a deal with our good friend Andy's publisher, Wiley, to do an iPhone book of my own.
Oh, great.
And so I'll be talking about the iPhone in perpetuity, but I got other stuff.
You're a great photographer. And, you know, after Merlin's conversation last week about the 50mm lens, I went out and bought one, and I'd love to do more photography stuff.
Well, and we got a new site coming up called photodiary.com where we go on photo walks.
Oh, fun.
That. And you can come with us if you
want. I would love to. Any
Alex, you can come too.
I'm coming.
We actually has more good photography. We should be talking about photography, not Max. I mean, Andy's a great photographer. Alex is a great photographer. You're a great photographer. For all I know, Chris Breen's a great photographer. So we should. Next time, we'll do more photography stuff.
Okay.
Photography of the air next week on Mac Breaks.
More pictures.
Sort of red, and there's a duck in the foreground. He's kind of out of focus.
Just look at Andy's diner photos, and you'll know what I'm talking about. Chris Breen is a part of the crew at Mac World Magazine. He does the Apple or Mac 911. Column for people with Mac emergencies. You can also read many of his books. Just go and go to the bookstore and say, you got any of that stuff for that Breen fella? And
that guy.
They'll point you to the shelf where they keep the Breen, the good stuff. And of course, he's a regular on Apple Phone Show and other podcasts. And I'm proud to say a regular now on Mac Break Weekly. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks very much, Leo.
Thank you all for joining us. Here's to your brick. I hope you send us your ideas, creative ideas for what to do with that bricked iPhone. Maybe you'll get that iPhone vest after all, Scott Horn.
Okay.
Who knows? I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. Another Mac Break is broke.